Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed. I'm Kat Napsa.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is our episode all about news, audience questions, and the return of Solo? Question mark.
Oh, there's a lot of questions there. I love these news and cues. It's the Force Center News Show, and we want to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, oh, you know it, we'll have our Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, this is our time to not just catch up as friends, but to catch our breaths from this wild, wild world. How are you?
I'm doing okay. It's been a busy, strange week. I've had some Star Wars adventures, but almost all of them have been in preparation for doing some podcasts, been reading Alphabet Squadron Shadowfall. We're excited to talk about that very soon. Reading random bits of news because they will come across my Twitter feed and then, ooh, there's stuff that we get to talk about today. So I'm excited about that. And then I've just, I've had some kind of life crises that maybe I'll get into someday. Nothing major. I'm okay. My wife's okay. Everybody's okay. But there have been some hurdles this week.
Yeah, oh, man. Well, just nice to know that at some point Star Wars will be there for you to just take you, your wife, and some whiskey into its warm embrace.
There were definitely some times this week where I did need patience. And man, just really taking the time to take a deep breath and think about how a Jedi would handle things has really helped me a lot. And having a lot of conversations about it and hearing how much other fans relate to specific Jedi moments, it's been giving me a lot of strength. So thanks to our whole big old Star Wars Force Center community for helping me take a deep breath.
Hey, that's good. And that's why this community's here. It's vibrant in the Discord community as well through the Force Center Patreon page. We appreciate the Force Center fans. So I'm guessing then not a lot of casual Battlefront 2 playing time this week, Joseph.
Absolutely not. None at all. I did not visit my exquisite pajamas or Count Dooku's exquisite pajamas. I like to think I'm wearing them when I'm playing him, but I did not get to run around in pajamas on Geonosis, sadly. But maybe this week. How about you? Did you run around in exquisite pajamas, either literally or metaphorically?
I was killed by Dooku in exquisite pajamas on my Tuesday night stream last week. I do try to do every Tuesday night Battlefront 2, do a stream, and it's always a lot of fun. And yeah, there's some times in that game, you know, where like you're like really upset of who or the username that kills you. But sometimes it's like, I'll be like, ah, Rey got me. Good for her.
Yeah.
Or Dooku in his pajamas. That's a good way to go. But other than that, yeah, the Star Wars adventures have just kind of been around when I can squeeze them in, and reading that Shadowfall book, which you're going to review late in the week, which is a great Star Wars book, great read, but I'll tell you what, it's a little thick at times. And so I think you and I both have had to do the, okay, deep breath. Let me get through this chapter. I'm really enjoying it, but there's a lot of words in here. And that's kind of been my Star Wars adventures for the week, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, also, I do want to shout out to our listener, Trey. We know him in some of the Discord chats as definitely not Trey, but it is definitely Trey. He heard me talking about Mighty Mugs, and he tracked down a Grand Moff Tarkin Mighty Mug.
Ooh.
And sent it out to me. So I have it here. I'm tempted to open it. I don't know. It's that packaging. I love the Mighty Mug packaging. So I guess I could keep the package and take out the figure, but it's not as fun. You know?
Are the mugs like the Funkos where you can kind of put them back in the package and for the most part, you'd never know?
Yeah. Yeah. If you're careful. And often I am not, but yes, if you're careful, I think you can.
Yeah, even the Black Series are like that, and that helps me. That helps me with my issues. There's just something, I got two copies of the vintage series 3 3/4 Rey from Rise of Skywalker, so I could take her out. And he's like, look at that, I got the other copy right there, and it still hurt me to rip that packaging. But you know what? I need to learn to let go. More Star Wars lessons.
More Star Wars lessons, indeed.
So I'd say get that Grand Moff out.
I think I might. Even Grace saw it and kind of, you know, she's not a huge Funko Pop fan, but I was like, these aren't Funko Pops. Mighty Mugs. So I might take it out and see if Tarkin will chase a Chihuahua around the house.
I think you should, because look at what happened to Tarkin the last time he refused to evacuate.
It's true. That's true. That'll make a good, I'm not sure how TikTok works, but that'll make a good TikTok video. Tarkin chased his dog. Speaking of Star Wars adventures, Joseph, we are going to launch a new Star Wars adventure. But it's an adventure we've been having recently. The Clone Wars Report, which is a show we just had a lot of fun doing, looking at season 7 of The Clone Wars. We are not leaving that world, Joseph. And yes, we know the Bad Batch is coming. We're not talking about that. We're talking about going back to the very beginning. We are going to rewatch The Clone Wars.
That is right. We're super excited to do it. As you said, we did the deep dive on every single episode of season 7 as it came out. We also did kind of 4 preview episodes if people wanted to go back and listen to those, talking about the main characters of Clone Wars as we saw it. We did an episode on Ahsoka, Obi-Wan, Anakin, and Padme. And Clone Wars is just something that brings both you and I a ton of joy. And it is, a series that just a ton of fans derive joy from. So we were like, let's go back and rewatch. And how we're going to set this up is we're going to do 1 episode per arc. So if a story happens to be 1 episode, we'll do an episode on that. If it's a 4 arc episode or a 4 episode arc, we'll do 1 Clone Wars episode on it. And so we are going to go through in the chronological order, which you can find if you just Google Clone Wars chronological order. You can find the first hit is StarWars.com that has a great breakdown of how to watch it in order. And if you want to watch it along with us, we're going to start with the first sort of 2-episode arc, which are 2 episodes that are deeper into the show, which is Cat and Mouse and Hidden Enemy. And then that will lead into the Clone Wars movie, which we'll do an episode about as well. So I'm excited to dig in. Are you, Ken?
I actually am very excited to dig in. I have, you know, Clone Wars is so, it's such a big of a big series and so many episodes, and it can get a little overwhelming when you're diving in. And even like I was putting together my book, I wanted to include some Clone Wars stuff, but I sometimes felt like I don't even know where to go, because there's a lot of things I love, a lot of things I can talk about, but there's so many. And so I've been looking forward to doing this rewatch, and this is a great way to do it. The arcs makes it a little less overwhelming, just even as a fan, to just sit there and go, all right, this week I watched these two, these four, these five, these this one. And I think that's a great way to approach
it. Yeah, and I think with doing it as an arc, I think it'll be able to allow us to really look at, like, what's the big picture story? And we're going to talk about some of all the fun surface stuff, because that's a huge part of the joy of Clone Wars, is the action and the humor and just the design of different planets and ships and all that stuff is such a big joy. But also there's just so much canon in Clone Wars, and I guess canon is not the right word. I guess what I want to say is, like, themes and lore. I feel like everything that Lucas ever loved about his idea of Star Wars, he put into the Clone Wars. So I'm really excited to look back at the arcs and say, like, what is this about? What is this arc really about? Why is it here? What is it celebrating? You know, is it celebrating Kaiju Godzilla Saturday morning movie, or is this one really about the horrors of war? Is this one about the philosophy of the Jedi? Is this about the nature of the Force? And really get down to what each arc is about.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about it during our look at season 7 when the Clone Wars came about. We didn't have podcasts to run to as much. We didn't have YouTube channels to go on and talk about Clone Wars and everything. So it's going to be fun to really go back and experience it with our eyes now and how we view Star Wars, but also combine it with our joy and exploration of that series that we had going on back then. So I'm truly excited. Truly excited, sir.
Excellent. Me too. Me too.
And speaking of excited, we are going to dive into some Star Wars news. And the headline that we got up here first, well, it's juicy. We love juicy headlines. Now, what's interesting about this is it's juicy, but there's no true facts you can point to that say, yes, this is something. This is juicy. It's just a lot of excitement about the possibilities. Folks, I think you know what we're talking about. Is Solo 2 a series going to happen? Is Alden Ehrenreich going to come back? Well, these are the questions we're all asking after Alden Ehrenreich appeared on the Happy, Sad, Confused podcast with Josh Horowitz. And here are some highlights. We do want to shout out our friends at Star Wars News Net, who, of course, have been along with a lot of the fan base, but they've been kind of the leaders and the folks behind the Make Solo 2 Happen hashtag, John Hoey and the team there. So shout out to them. They had a great article, pulled out the key things of this podcast, Joseph. And here's the things. We'll run it down and we'll just dive in here. He doesn't feel any new pride now about Solo. He always felt pride. He talked about expectations of fans and the director change affecting how the movie was received. Oh, we've had some thoughts about that. Little note here on kids, about hearing about kids who love Solo. That's who these movies are for, kids and the kids in us. And I think that felt great and continues to feel great. He would, and this is the big one, of course, we returned to the role for the right version of it. Felt he just got the character of Han to where the point where it's the Han we love. And he also goes and say how he likes Lucasfilm as being inventive and how they're using Star Wars. All right. I dumped all that on the table like Sabacc cards, Joseph. So I just want to roll up our sleeves and dive into everything about this news, this interview, how we feel, the realities, what this could really mean. Let's get into the Solo of it all, sir. How are you thinking?
Oh, yeah. Please? Yeah. Let's try to get a full Sabacc, even without cheating with that green Psylob. I did love that he said that he has always felt pride in it and that he was aware going in that, okay, well, there's already kind of some baggage because of the director change. And I think one of the things he said that was very wise of, like, you tell people there's going to be a young Han Solo movie and everybody pictures what that's going to be. So they come in with expectations. And I really liked that he said in particular that people coming around to it who maybe didn't like it the first time but are growing in their admiration of it is because it's people seeing it as what it is, which is a thing that you and I have talked about. A lot of that is a challenge as a fan to release your expectations and just see what is there in front of you. So I think that's really great that he highlighted that. I love that level of Alden Ehrenreich is clearly a very thoughtful guy, and I love that level of, hey, he's not just an actor who shows up and does the job. He's thinking through all of these things, you know? And I think that shows in his performance, that intelligence, really analyzing how people are going to respond and what it's all really about. So that was great to me. I love that he says it's for kids and the kids in us, because that makes me feel included as a middle-aged man.
Yeah. It's like when I look at the Lego boxes, ages 6 to 12. Nuts to that. I'm digging it.
Yeah, it's like we've talked a lot about the big themes of Solo, and I love really that it is about, can you have any even semblance of what you would think of as personal freedom or, you know, liberty to pursue your life when you're under total, you know, financial and political domination by a tyrannical government and crime lords? You know, it's kind of some meaty stuff. But when you and I saw it, you had seen it before, but when I saw it with you at one of the early screenings in LA, I came home and my wife was like, I don't want to know anything about it. But what did you think? And I turned around and then like whirled around like I was Han Solo with a blaster, because it made me feel like a kid. And like, that's my review. It made me feel like I want to, you know, jump on my bike and pretend it's the Falcon and zip down the street. It made me feel like a kid. So I really like that he said the kids and the kids in all of us, because I think that's very true. So those are some of my feelings about how his some of the way he talked about it. And then we get into like the could it return, will it return stuff. So I don't want to monopolize our talking time. So did you feel anything about any of the stuff he said before we get into the is it going to return or is it going to return stuff what really grabbed you?
No, actually, I'll tell you, at first it was the pride thing, because you know, there were some things with another tweet from John Boyega that people this week can really twist into their narrative on how much they don't like the sequel trilogies, right? There's this thing of when an actor seems to distance himself or move on from a role, you know, which is just these very base level realistic things where most actors do. And most actors in Star Wars at one point have said, hey, that was fun. I'm good. I'm going to go be in a legal drama now or something else. So Alden has been, he's very thoughtful. I you can just get that sense from what he put into the role, which is probably why I admit to getting pretty angry, actually, when I hear people like, nah, he was good, but that wasn't Solo. Like my grip, the dark side takes over me, because he is such an actor. He made so many great decisions, and he didn't do an impersonation. He wasn't a YouTube kid trying to get a voiceover gig on TikTok because he can do voices. He's a performer. He's an actor. He brings character to this role. Made it his own, but also touched on everything we love. So to hear him go like, yeah, I always felt pride, because he kind of did go silent, right? He wasn't out there on social media. He wasn't doing a ton of interviews post the press push for Solo. So to hear now to be like, nah, I always knew what we had going on. Look who was in this movie. And yeah, well, they had some issues. He acknowledges that clearly. He's in the center of that storm for a lot of the things, and even some of the stories that a lot of them probably just urban legends at this point of some of the problems on the Solo set. He gets it, but he was to hear him say, yeah, I always felt pride. And I think he's being nice about it. I'm saying that he's kind of like, hey, I'm glad people are finally catching up to what we did. Kind of what you said, Joseph, just like you can peel away expectations. Time kind of heals some wounds that you may have carried into that theater. And to see it as it is and always was, not perfect, I get it. But a movie that to me still is almost the most New Hopey of them all.
Oh, yeah.
That ties into a lot of the things that George put into Star Wars. By things, I mean the influences and the speed, the pacing, the adventure, all those kind of things. And I think parts of Rise of Skywalker early on actually really tap into that too. But I think Solo, I look at it and go, I bet George would have made something similar to this, actually, quite frankly.
I agree. I think it feels really in line with sort of Lucas era Star Wars in this really interesting way, while also still being something, you know, clearly new. And you're right, that was another specific quote that he said. And one of the super cool things about it, or the coolest thing, is look at this amazing cast, which, yeah, I mean, you do look at that cast and go, yeah, you really can't sleep on that cast.
Yeah. Oh, it's great stuff. And the kids thing, you know, we bang that drum a lot, and it's there. And again, that ties into New Hope too, of just this, you know, whip bang, whiz bang, you know, serial adventure monsters and everything beneath it all is this giant lesson of tyranny and oppression and how you know, that's New Hope too.
Yeah.
So I love that too. As far as the big juicy stuff.
Yeah, just, let's do it.
Let's dive into it. He did say he would return to the role for the right version of it. And Dutch touched upon Lucasfilm being inventive and how they're using Star Wars and how they're telling Star Wars, you know, essentially saying Disney Plus, but I think just kind of overall what they got now and the potential of going forward with these stories. So I don't know, man. A lot of people are reading into what he said. Hey, he wouldn't be talking about this. He wouldn't answer that question if there wasn't something going on. It's, hey, you know, maybe. I can't say no. I can't say yes. Look at Ewan McGregor. He's done a great job for years going, what's Obi-Wan? You know, you can hide stuff, but this is just seems like an honest interview that gets up the hope. So I don't know what I think right now about the realities of something happening.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the odds are much better than they were in, you know, in a different world. I think the fact that I don't think there's a like, is it happening or isn't it happening? You know, it's either A or B. I think it's somewhere much more in between. He has some kind of contract, as yep. we know, that was for other movies, which of course was like, that's not shocking. That's just what people would do when they're launching a movie like Solo, of like, well, if it's a huge hit, we're going to want to turn around right away. But I think that the combination that he might just still plan on have a contract, and the fact that Disney Plus does give this freedom where they need content, and it's just not the same as a movie. Big theatrical releases, even in the before times, before things have changed in unknown ways because of the virus, that's a big commitment. There are only so many slots. So kind of, if you do Solo 2, that kind of means you're not doing something else, right? That you're putting more of your eggs in that specific Star Wars basket. And that is just so less true on Disney Plus, right? Because we've got all of these other series coming. So at that point, if Solo's not your bag, if you really don't think Alden Ehrenreich makes any sense as Solo, you can keep your Disney Plus subscription and you can watch Bad Batch and Cassian Andor, and you can get really excited for the Leslie Headland series, and you know who knows what else is coming out. And you could just not watch Solo. Whereas, like, if that is the Star Wars movie of, you know, 2022 or whatever, then that is really taking up the Star Wars oxygen in the room. And I think that is such a big difference in how we consume things that makes it feel like more like a true possibility.
Absolutely. It's been a talking point for a bit now that, hey, if Solo the movie had been a series, would have been received better and everything. Those were great conversations, fun conversations, and even painful conversations to have as fans of the movie back in 2018, 2019. But now that Mandalorian has come and shot through the gates first and has been received well, has been considered a success, you got to imagine around those offices there in Lucasfilm up north or Disney down here, that there are people that look around going, hey, that worked. Because when things work in business, we try to repeat them. Until we mess them up, I guess. So you could lose this favor, by the way. You know, if some of the other stuff could come out, maybe it hits with a thud. And quite frankly, that's, you know, what happened a little bit with the movie, right? They're running pretty high. So the movie changed the way they looked at the movie. So things could change the way they look at Disney Plus. But for right now, it's real positive. And I like what you said. You know, it's good odds. Never tell Han Solo the odds. There's good odds something could be happening. But let's maybe talk about what that could be. He talked about finally getting, not finally like, oh, finally, but hey, as an actor, he got that character at the end of the movie to the point where, you know, we kind of the points that we loved about the character and the persona that we loved about the character, not fully formed, not fully cooked, not fully out of the oven, but Han was there at the end. And he would be excited. We're paraphrasing a bit here, excited playing that role going forward. But I want to dive into that a little bit, Jeff, because I still think this world put forth by the movies is more interesting to me than just continuing Han Solo. And Han Solo is my guy, as everyone knows. Kira, Maul, the Crimson Dawn, Infus Nest, all those kind of things. That Solo verse is maybe a little bit more intriguing, but I get what Alden's saying. So what do you think about where we would take this?
Yeah.
Or could you take
I think I get what Alden is saying, is this is taking him from this dream of flying to the stars to, by the end, he has achieved it and he's got the Falcon and he has Chewie, but more importantly, he has this freedom that he maybe is not entirely equipped to deal with, right? You know, like, even the end of the movie has this great, like, hey, when have I ever steered you wrong? We're just going to go make a deal with Jabba the Hutt and it's going to be great. And like, you have to know, like, any fan of Han Solo or Star Wars, I think, would close their eyes and go, did Han's first job with Jabba go perfectly smoothly? No. And how much of that was Han's fault? Most of it, you know? And that's, I think, both the fun and where you could still get challenge in the character, is he is the Han who's out there having adventures in the Falcon with Chewie. But I think at this point, he's got to have so much joy of his freedom. And he's got to be even more reckless than the Han we meet in A New Hope, and just so cocky. And the wound of being abandoned by Kira, and from his perspective, betrayed by Kira, you know, I think we, the audience, know a better truth, that that's not buried too deep. So he's still, I think, going to be wrestling with that pain of, I kind of want to help people. I kind of want to be around people. I kind of don't want to be alone, but I've been burned. And I think by the time we meet him in A New Hope, he's been through 10 years of, he's tried to connect with people a few times and gotten burned again, is the way I would take it. So he's just this, he is the Han Solo we know, but to me, he's this great stew of volatile feelings of joy, reckless, sad, and, you know, still longing for connection, but burned by connection. And if you can tell a story in that mode, that it still has energy and fun, but is still wrestling with this guy who is conflicted about who he is, you know, you got a good stew.
Yeah, it's a great stew. It's also why I don't think it needs to be the only part of the meal.
Yeah.
You know, we can have other things to talk about. Yeah, and the stuff with Beckett learning to shoot first, and it's a fun play on the old joke there, the special edition kind of controversy, but it's also, you know, what he learns and where he ends up at. But it's not a straight line, right? From Solo to New Hope, like you said, from here to Chalmers Cantina is not a straight line. There's still a lot of things. And I, especially hearing you describe so well, just what you could do with his soul, there's scar tissue forming and there's scar tissue that's still to be made. So, because the theme, it's that Kira scene, and why I love Kira saying, you're not the bad guy, you're the good guy, paraphrasing, but also tying that to the Most Wanted moment where Kira really experiences Han and what makes him good. It's not so much these actions, it's his view and how he treats her and how she, you know, I love that scene. Ray Carson just wrote it so well of Kira knows who she is, but she, for the first time ever, sees that someone else sees that too. And where that comes from is so important to Han. He's not just running from the fight and he wants to be a scoundrel and he's jaded and he's, I'm going to do this. It's still there. And he's wrestling with it. We've talked about that going away all the way to end of Han's life. So when faced with the fate of the galaxy is still kind of, it's bubbling up, right? I mean, he's in the thick of things going on. And now he's not just on Savarine or on Vandor. He's traveling around the galaxy and he's seeing it. And how does he, I'm trying to profit off this chaos. I'm a smuggler trying to make my way in this galaxy in which the Empire kind of is helping these criminal organizations grow. And in fact, needs them to continue their kind of oppression. And I'm part of that, but not just the rebellion. It isn't just simple as rebels going up, but just people. He's a good, caring person. So when he's constantly faced with that, what does he do?
Yeah.
How does he justify his actions or his career, his money? But also, you know, is he just Robin Hood? Can he be that? And what does Chewie think? I'd love to get more. And I keep talking all the time. I think now more than ever, at the end of New Hope, when he takes his money and run, I think Chewie goes, hey man, remember we did this to Infus? Are you going to keep doing this? You can't keep doing this. And I think there's some conversations that Chewie and him have probably had. So anyways, I think that is interesting stuff. It's not just the entire story, but it could get repetitive in the wrong hands. But that's also the lesson of Han. It's repetitive. He continues to run from himself several times.
But there's all these different elements to explore, and I think they're seeded in the movie. Like what you're talking about with that Han shot first moment with Beckett is that's great, because he is also learning, like, well, in order to just literally survive, I have to be brutal. Like, you know, he's not a character who revels in other people's pain. You know, I think he'd rather have a drink and a laugh, you know, but learning that lesson of like, yeah, sometimes you do just have to shoot first and getting, you know, more moral quandary out of that. And with the rebellion, as you're saying, I think there's all great points. There's so much to work with just for him as a character. And then you get into, is it a continuation of the Kira story, as, you know, John Kasdan has been on record saying that he's got ideas for what would happen next if he was involved and if Emilia Clarke was involved. But even if not, there's just a lot of great stuff to mine. The thing that when I was thinking about like what I wanted to see, it's all this stuff about, you know, who Han is as a character. But when I was thinking like, oh, well, what would be like the pitch line, the log line, the line that would hook audiences into being excited about seeing more Solo? And the line that came to my mind is just an actual quote from Han from A New Hope. Like, to me, what's exciting about this is just the literal log line of, kid, I've flown from one side of this galaxy to the other. I've seen a lot of strange stuff. Like, don't you kind of just want to see Han flying from one corner of the galaxy to the other, seeing strange stuff?
I love that. Solo, Strange Days Indeed, coming to Disney Plus. Yeah, that's a great, that is a great line to pull, buddy. That is exactly what Solo's story could center around. And then it's the lessons that he learns there. Again, I remember getting in one big argument with someone at a party, who just was like, oh, I hated that movie. I hated Solo because, you know, you can't have Han, you know, in New Hope when we meet him, he's, you know, he's a bad guy. And then, you know, he's a good guy before then. I'm like, man, you really swung and missed on understanding this movie. But also that is not what Han is in A New Hope.
Nope.
There's no indication that he is a quote bad guy. So a lot to play with there. Again, I'll say this, I'm personally more interested in the bigger picture Kira stuff. I actually hope he never runs into Kira. You know, I don't actually want that. I want that to be such a deep buried scar that never heals, and he never gets a chance to heal it, and he's always left to wonder. But, you know, put them in a scene again, I'm not going to turn off my Disney Plus.
Yeah, no, and that's a really great discussion, too, of I definitely want Kira's story to return. That's one of my biggest wants out of Star Wars storytelling right now. But does it have to overlap with Solo or not? It's a very interesting question.
Very much. Well, we will absolutely update you if official word ever happens, or if this is just a actor on a podcast in a long form interview talking about a lot of things and we are having fun pulling out a sentence or two, which again is part of the fun of being a Star Wars fan. Speaking of fun and younger characters, we finally got a little preview of the upcoming novel Poe Dameron Freefall by Alex Segura. Got a little excerpt that we got to read on StarWars.com. I read it. It was, I liked the pacing of it. I have started to realize that I think I just like the novels that are, quote, young adult, because maybe I'm not as smart as I thought, number one. And two, they just move faster. Joseph, what did you think about this little piece, little preview we got?
Well, I agree with you. I like the books for the young adult inside us all. I did like it. It was a great little slice to just give you a feeling of what this book is going to be about. You know, I'm delighted that Zori Bliss, or spoilers for people who have not read this, she's called Zori Wynn in this. So that's very fun. A little bit of mystery. I'm glad that she's front and center because I love that character. I love that relationship with Poe. I love what we're introduced to right away, which is Poe wrestling with kind of some Han Solo-ish stuff of, hey, I'm a good guy, right? But I'm attracted to experimenting with, you know, is what I'm doing. I want adventure. I want to push back on my youth, but, you know, in what way? So I'm really curious to see kind of how they continue to play with that level of morality. You know, spice running is generally in Star Wars drug running, but as they really spent a lot of time talking about in Clone Wars, the spice is for medicine too. So is this going to be about, yeah, I'll run some spice. What if we delivered it to these people who need it for medicine? Is that going to be, you know, a conflict of the book? The other thing that really struck me, there was one particular line specifically about Poe kind of pushing back on being a child of heroes and all of those expectations of it. And I love that that's got some rhythm with Kylo, in that that is something that probably a lot of kids his age are dealing with. And it's a way to get into something that's, you know, very real and very relatable. If you grow up, I think, you know, with kind of loving parents who are really like, this is the straight and narrow, don't stray from it. It makes you really curious to see what happens when you do. And that's, I think, a real world thing that's relatable and very specifically interesting in this period of time where the galaxy's lousy with, you know, victory babies, you know, the children of the rebellion who are getting into their teens and going, well, you all I ever hear about is your amazing adventures. So I want to have some.
I love that. I think we focus on the same spot because when this news of this book got announced, and even going back to the Rise of Skywalker stuff, I think you and I, as often, we are on the same page. It's why we work together well and talk Star Wars together well and have fun doing it. We are connected to this idea of what came before, and it just kind of made sense to both of us that he would be like, "Hey, man, hey, Dad. I don't want your life. I don't want to play college football. I want to go join the band." And it pops up here. I'll actually read the line because he talks about being, for better or worse, on the wrong side. And he's trying to break off of Yavin 4, which is this little piece that we're reading from here on StarWars.com. But he says it was as if his entire being was making a decision to leave Yavin 4, to repudiate what came before and carve a new path for himself and deal with the consequences later. Either that, or he'd be in a jam not even his father's connections could get him out of. He's a teenager, late in his teen years here. His mom has passed away. And how that plays out, she could very well be, and I consider her a casualty of the Civil War, even though she survived it. So to lose his mother there in some way, have it be connected to being in the military, or being part of this new government or what's going, because in this little clip here that we read, the New Republic Security Bureau is chasing him. They need him. They want they want to question him about something. So I love that. That I think you and I kind of went to that. That is the center of this little piece we read and probably the center of this book. And I think I'm excited to see how Poe deals with that.
Yeah, it gives me just really classic Star Wars feelings of you have to figure out who you are for yourself. You know, no one can teach you. You can get guidance from a mentor, and you sure do in Star Wars. But this idea of that, like, hey, yeah, I'm going to end up following in my father and my mother's footsteps, but I can't do it with confidence until I question it for myself.
Yeah, how boring of a character would Poe be if he just was like goody two shoes guy? And you know, I'm all for goody two shoes people because I've been one my whole life. My mom and dad said, "Don't do drugs." I didn't do drugs. Right, that's me. But if Poe was just like, "Yeah, my mom is a pilot, my dad was a soldier. Sounds good for me." And here we go.
Okay. And it makes sense with the character that we see in the movie, even in The Force Awakens, where he is pretty much on the straight and narrow. He's still cocky. He's still taking risks, you know, and that element of his character comes from somewhere.
And questioning things and those around him. So this book comes out, Poe Dameron Freefall comes out August 4th. And you better believe we'll be reading all of that. I want to see what happens. How does Zori Bliss go from Zori Wynn to Zori Bliss? What's gone on there? Final news story of the week, a sad one. Last week, Grant Imahara passed away, and he is definitely known far and wide for being part of Mythbusters, BattleBots, and many, many other things, a wide range of accomplishments and appearances. And a great legacy, passed away suddenly last week at the age of 49. But for our purposes here, he is definitely part of the Star Wars family. Though he kind of began his career as an electrical engineer and a model maker, he got his big start at ILM. And he worked on all three of the prequels. A ton of other movies there at that time. Matrix, big stuff that he did on Galaxy Quest. And that launched him into his kind of on-camera career a little bit later on with Mythbusters and all that kind of stuff. He was an R2-D2 controller and essentially rebuilt R2 for the prequels with some new bells and whistles and everything. It's fast. You can find some clips out there of his work on that. But he was one of the R2 controllers. And there was even, he played C-3PO at some events. I remember hearing some of those stories from Bonnie Burton about that, and including he was on Oprah. So here's the thing. It's sad. It's tremendously sad. And small world, Joseph and I have both had the chance to be around Grant and get to know Grant to varying degrees. I don't ever want to position myself as someone who knew him super close, but for a long time, for a couple of years, he has up until his unfortunate passing last week. He was tremendously close with my one of my best friends and writing partner, Matt Key. So there was a period of time I got to be around Grant a lot. And this is a huge loss that hit a lot of people really hard. And Joseph, you had a story you told me, and I really wanted you to share it here, that your interaction, your big interaction with him was him to a T.
Yeah. I met him on the Jonathan Coulton cruise. And for anybody who isn't familiar, you know, Jonathan Coulton is a singer, songwriter, luminary in the general nerd and pop culture sphere. And he has this cruise that's all sorts of awesome people that I got a chance to meet on that and become, you know, friends with Will Wheaton and John Scalzi and all sorts of people. And one of the later ones that I was on, Grant was a guest as well. And he was just so friendly and welcoming, which everybody says about him, which is absolutely true. But, you know, I came up to talk to him because I wanted to ask him about the prequels. And he had come to one of my shows that I did on the boat and was like very complimentary and friendly. And it's all stuff that people are saying about him. But what struck me about it in that moment when I met him is, it was an environment where he absolutely could have big timed me. He, you know, especially on a boat full of nerds. In the people who go on this boat, there's a lot of people who are big pop culture fans, but are also like extremely technically knowledgeable people. A lot of software and physical engineers like Grant, and you know, people loved him and knew him from Mythbusters. He was a huge star in the world, yeah, but particularly on this boat. So he absolutely could have been like, who are you? You know, and the level at which he did not do that, the level at which he was like, yeah, I'd love to talk to you about that. And I really enjoyed your show. And he was just, you know, I think it's what everybody's saying about him, but I got to experience it in that moment, is everybody is taking the time to go, like you just did, to be really respectful to people who were truly deeply close to him and say, I wasn't truly deeply close to him, but he made you feel like you were. And yeah, I think that is just a magical thing, to have somebody who is not only that, you know, talented and charismatic, but just made you feel special by talking to him. And that's absolutely what he did when I met him. Got to do a, you know, a couple different panels and shows, and he would pop up at parties all the time for people. He was on we were on the same panel the day you and I met. Grant and I were on that panel together the day you and I met. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he was also, just if you're in the LA, you know, pop culture nerd world at all, he was just kind of a presence as well as his well earned fame. And that's the big thing for me, is just that gift of being in the presence of someone who makes you feel special and is themselves an amazingly special person, and just treated everyone with a huge amount of just kindness and respect.
Yeah, I love that tale. And yeah, that's true. How Joseph and I met, I was attending, what was it? LA, it was LA Comic Con. And my friend Audrey Kearns had a panel, and on it was my buddy Matt Key and Grant Imahara. So I followed Matt and Grant over there and sat in the audience. And I was like, who's this this real funny jerk from Minnesota up there? Man, it's just making me laugh. And I hate when other people make me laugh. And that's literally how Joseph and I met. That's the day I went there. And yeah, it's so true in this industry where, you know, there's a lot of ego, and we all have it in some certain degree, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it was all ego, and there's all chest pumping, and there's all an exchange of resumes. What'd you do? What do I do? What do we do? You know, and some of that's just natural, unfortunately. Grant was often the smartest and most successful person in the room, and I can tell you the least concerned about it. Hmm. And it, time and time again, it showed in your story when you told me that off air. It was like, yeah, that really is it. And my one personal experience I have, and there's some things that, you know, are just not my story to tell, of things he's done for people. And he was involved heavily in the amazing marriage proposal that Matt Key put together. That's a LARPing thing. You can find it on YouTube. And Grant was a big part of that and gave so much of his time freely. But, you know, I was in this crazy wild nerd friend group, still am, but you know, I was at the heyday of it like 5-6 years ago, and I got invited to a Dungeons and Dragons game, and I never really played it, and I was really intimidated. People like, you know, Matt Mercer was the DM, his wife Marisha was playing, Matt Key was playing, all these folks who now have careers on the, and I was really intimidated, really afraid, but they invited me and I wanted to do this. They said, "Don't worry, we're going to pair you with Grant." And Grant hadn't played D&D as much, or hadn't played in a while. And I kind of communicated with Grant, and we were going to be dwarf warlords, brothers. And I was just like, man, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. This is going to be fun, but I don't know what to do. And he showed up. He's like, "Don't worry." And he showed up with not just a backstory of our characters. He showed up with a song that our warlord dwarfs would sing together. And he and I sat in the corner of this D&D game, just talking in bad Gimli voices the whole night. And my intimidation of being there, you know, which again, no one in that group was making me intimidated. I was, and he went out of his way, Grant did, to just pull me in and be like, "Yeah, we're gonna have fun." And that's one of my Grant memories that I love. And the final one, I took a picture with him. I think I have it on my Facebook bag. I pulled it to share in some of my Knapsack Files Discord stuff. I was at San Diego Comic-Con 2015. It's Matt Key on a phone and Grant, and I'm taking a selfie with them. And Grant told me that, you know, I said, "Hey, goodbye, you know, convention craziness." And he goes, "Don't worry, man. 3 minutes of convention time is equal to like 8 months of real time and spending it with friends." And you know what, Grant, 49 years is not enough time, but he packed so much life into those 49 years that it is that same equation. 3 minutes of con time, 8 minutes of life, 49 years, too short, but man, what a lifetime. So we here at Force Center, part of the Star Wars community, we say goodbye to a really, really just wonderful person. And you know, in this day and age where a lot of times people are exposed for maybe who they are, or the negative underbelly the industry is a lot of times put out there, it's nice to know that someone that maybe from afar, maybe you watched them on MythBusters or BattleBots, or just saw an interview and you thought, "That guy seems pretty good, seems pretty great." It's nice to know he was. And that's one of the things I'll take from his life as well. Be who you are, be kind, and put that first. And that will get you some places. And man, Grant, we miss you, man. His loss is felt by so many people, but we here at Force Center wanted to say goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah. The last thing I want to say is, if you want to feel just a little bit of, there'll be some sadness in it, but a little bit of joy, just Google Grant Imahara and Baby Yoda. There's a great article written up by Bonnie Burton, a friend of Grant's and ours as well, about how he saw Baby Yoda and he's like, "I got to build one of those to take to hospitals." And it's just everything. It's just a vision of choosing to use your talents to put joy and excitement into the world. And I think we all need inspirations for that. And I think that's, to me, one of the great things about Grant. He's an inspiration, and he will continue to be an inspiration for using your time and your talent to put joy into the world.
Mm-hmm. Well said indeed, sir. Cheers, Grant. Cheers, Grant. We'll see you on the other side. We're going to take a quick break here. On the other side of this break, we'll have our Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. And we are going to dive into Jedi Temple Challenge. Real fun episode. We'll see you on the other side of this break.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, 4Center fans, don't forget 4Center is on YouTube. Head over there to catch up with our new show, Star Wars Show and Tell. Joseph, Jennifer, Ken, and special guests sit down and share favorite items from their own Star Wars memorabilia collections. Plus, there's the In Memoriam video series, encore presentations of Databank Brawl, and special programming all there for you, and more shows on the way. It's 4Center on YouTube. Check it out. Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138. Welcome back to 4Center, the news and cues. We are fast approaching the cues part of the show, but before we do, Joseph, we want to do our 4Center recommends an audiobook we think they out there listening should try on us. What do we have this week?
This week we still have Alphabet Squadron : Shadowfall by Alexander Freed. We will be discussing it on Thursday, so if you want to give a listen so you're all caught up, go for it. You can do it here.
Do it here. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/4center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audiobook. Grab a book and support the show. All right. Episode 7 of Jedi Temple Challenge. Oh, boy. We got some stuff in here. This, I thought, was a real cinematic episode. There's some cinematic moments here. But here's our teams. We always love to talk about the teams. Teho and Hannah, the blue team. Kyan and Benji, orange team. Clementine and Oliver, the purple team. Loved all these kids. Some of their names, particularly Kyan and Clementine, reminded me of Apple and all these wonderful names different generations have. Loved it. Loves hearing that there. Did you have a reaction to the name Kyan like I did, Joseph?
You know, I was just having a reaction to all the names because some of them I'm familiar with, but it is just like it's a great generational reminder. And please, I want to get as many of younger generation names, very modern young generation names said. I want them to win so I can hear Yoda say, good job, Kyan, Clementine.
Look, I'm not saying we need a bunch of Bobs and Bills, but it's definitely, we're in a very colorful names and I love them. But blue team, orange team, purple team, they went into it. And look, there's some stuff we're going to talk about here. And Joseph, I'm an old Little League coach. All right. I coached some baseball for a while. The coach in me started to come out.
So I didn't know that about you. And yet I did.
Yes, you did. Yes. Right. Yeah. So, look, we're having fun. We're not here to hammer on the competitive stylings of 10-year-olds, but man, I got to, but first this was cinematic. There's a lot of stuff. Teho helping his sister, Hannah, pulling her back from the brink more than one time when she was about to fall and she did fall and pulling her with the rope and everything. I was like, this is truly a Star Wars adventure, man. I loved it.
Oh yeah, that was great. That was great. I got. Are you ready for a Jedi Temple Challenge conspiracy theory?
Yes, I am.
You know, every week when it comes on, and there's their younger children or shorter kids, I'm like, they're gonna get just screwed. Sorry, by the leap and lift. I was trying to find another word. I failed. Yeah. They're gonna have an unfair disadvantage on the leap and lift, and we cut away. We know that a couple of those, the shorter kids were definitely having a hard time, and yet we cut away and they still somehow got the pieces. And I want to see that footage because I think the leap and lift is unfair.
I think we could release the leap and lift footage hashtag. occasionally the great and wonderful Scott Bromley, who co-created the show, produced Star Wars show. He'll listen. He listens to Force, listen to some Jedi Challenge review stuff. Scott, if you're listening, we want to release the leap and lift footage. We want to see it.
Uncut. It gives a great tension every episode. Yeah. Like, how's that kid going to do on the leap and lift?
Yeah. So this is the point, and a lot of people in our Discord were talking about it. I got to tell you, through our Patreon page, we have the Discord server where you can join the conversations and all those kind of things. The most interaction right now is on the Jedi Temple Challenge. After every episode, people pour into the Discord server to talk about it, and they were talking about this moment. Kyan and Benji were doing so good, and it looked as though they were going to be one of the two teams that advanced. And they get their pieces. They get back. Benji, God bless him. All of 10. I coach baseball ages 9 to 12. All right? That was the experience. 2 years of a coach, Little League coach. I was a manager second year. All right? Benji violated one of my sport rules. It's from Barry Sanders, the great running back from the Detroit Lions. Act like you've been there before. And Benji, God bless him. He was so happy. Joseph, he was so happy. Put his hands in the air and screamed, yes, yes. Then was reminded you must build your lightsaber hilt. He turns around, his partner, Kyan, turns around, what? Huh? And the other team comes in and sneaks in, not even sneaks, finished the job and built that hilt and moved on. Oh, my heart was breaking, but what a coaching moment.
Yeah, it really was. It is that lesson of the Jedi of like, yes, yes, joy, adventure, you know, excitement, pride. These are all good emotions, but they can be dangerous. And this was a dangerous moment. What is the term? I learned it watching a Super Bowl when there's a penalty for it. Is it excessive celebration in the end zone? Is that the term?
15 yards on the ensuing kickoff, my friend. You better believe it.
Excessive celebration. That's the sport I thought of. Yeah. I'm like, oh, this is an excessive celebration error.
Yeah, no, I like my passion in my sports contest. I'm actually an old school baseball fan who actually enjoys these new things like bat flips and kind of I enjoy a player showing his heart. But this is and you and I talked a little early on the competition angle and how that can sometimes go awry. There's certainly valuable lessons to be learned from sports and competition, all those things. I definitely believe it as a coach. But this is when the hubris of competition overshadows your mind. And I hope, I feel, I trust that Benji has absolutely learned this moment going forward, not just in this game, should he play again, but in life as well. Life.
Yeah. Yeah. And to your cinematic point, and the reason that Benji's just brief moment of celebration was critical is it was so tight. Everybody was killing it on all of these challenges, and it was so tight. It was really thrilling.
It was thrilling. But we moved on to the next round. And first of all, I love the orange Clementine and Oliver. This Oliver kid.
Was
some of his quotes. I only wrote down one. I could have written down a lot more. But not only his quotes, but the way he said them, his phrasing. I love this kid. And when he was just... He said, the previous steps have already been a thrill ride.
Yeah, that kid's me. Kid is, glasses and everything. Glasses and vocabulary. That was me.
I love it. Oh, my gosh. That makes sense. In the story, we always love pulling out some stuff. And I got to ask you, what do you feel about purple curried crunch bugs?
I like it. I love them. I kind of like these stories are all great. And I like this kind of phraseology that's really been emerging in a lot of the Star Wars literature. That is literature, the books that I'm being like Oliver. That sounds like, like calf for coffee. Like I like the things that it's not of this world, but it kind of sounds like it is of this world. Purple curried crunch bugs does sound like some sort of a weird delicacy,
Yeah. I want to see them at Galaxy's Edge. I want a lot of things for the show to show up in Galaxy's Edge.
Oh man, right? I want a whole Jedi Temple Challenge, playset for adults at Galaxy's Edge.
And we I believe it was our friend Kai Thatch in the Discord server reminded, because we talked about the outfits last week. What one would you buy if it was at Batu or Doc Ondor's? And I do believe it was Kai. I don't want to give credit to him if it's not him, but I do believe it's Kai because he has a lot of experiences down there in SoCal at Disneyland, that the outfits are part of the Jedi Academy kind of training show. We talked about Kim Cannon being a part of that. She was a previous guest here on Force Center. And that's where the outfits have come from. And I really love that connection. I think that's great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Clementine and Oliver did make it then, but they did not become Jedi Knights. It just didn't. They didn't even, the dark side didn't even have a chance to show up. They like threw in Whitworth at the end. That was a cut in. I think I want to release the full dark side cut. I think they were so fast and worked together so well. Dark side didn't have a chance to even take hold, but then they get held up on the plugs, the lighting plugs here. But you know what, Joseph, there's a great lesson. They said it in their post interview. They didn't become Jedi, but they remained proud. I think that's important to take from this match.
Yeah, as Oliver said, naturally they would have preferred to win. But no, it was a truly great episode. They all did, say things early on about their competition and their desire to win, but everybody played like really hard with just such great enthusiasm and spirit. And it was great to see Oliver and Clementine did not give in to the dark side at all. They panicked a little bit, as I think most people would at trying to plug those things together, and they didn't quite make it. But it felt like this episode was full of true Jedi Knights.
True Jedi Knights indeed. And if Joseph and I ever get to compete in the adult version of this show, please, fingers crossed, I can see how it's going to be. We're going to be up there and I'm going to be like, the lights are on, let's go. And you're going to be like, our way has been illuminated. Forward, Michelle.
Exactly. I got mocked thoroughly at Thanksgiving dinner because the gravy was forming a skin I think I was like in fourth grade and I'd read this word probably in a Doctor Who novelization. I was like, the gravy is coagulating.
That's the best. That is the best. You, sir, are amazing. And Oliver, if you're listening, Clementine and Oliver, you all were great. And Oliver, you are a character. And I hope there is a chance to see some of these kids come back for some stuff. So that was a great episode of Jedi Temple Challenge. And as always, some great stuff with Ahmed Best, Mary Holland. I really enjoy the way that they're interacting with each other. A lot of fun. But at the end of the day, we want to release the leap and lift footage.
Release it all. Uncut leap and lift footage.
I would never endorse online harassment, but if any of our listeners want to tweet Scott Bromley and just say, Force Center wants you to hashtag release the leap and lift footage, let's get it going. All right, Joseph, that's our look at the seventh episode of Jedi Temple Challenge. Three more left in this first season. Now we're going on to audience questions.
That is right. We pull audience questions from social media and from our patrons on Patreon. We're going to start with some questions from Twitter. This one comes from Glenn Davis. Glenn says, what's the one minor character from the sequel trilogy you would love to have a deluxe action figure of? Grumgar relaxing, Caretaker's repairing hut, Oma Trace and his shop? Those are all great options. So part of me just wants to say, yes, I want all of those. Yeah. But Ken, where are you going? This one tortures my soul because we don't have a lot of major characters from the sequel trilogy who are action figures yet. It's just times change and interests change and economies change and all that thing. But if you could have not major characters, but little side characters, deluxe action figure, where are you going in the sequel trilogy?
Well, you kind of said it there too with Glenn. Not only a great question, but great answers. I just can't get my mind off of Grumgar and Bazine Natel just kind of relaxing. Like, that play set would be great. And as we're recording, you know, there's some new information coming out of Black Series releasing like a Battle of Endor set with some. I think we even got. I think I saw Poplu and a speeder bike and
what?
Leia, Luke with Poncho, Han, but no trench coat on Han,
ooh,
which is controversial. So. I love those kind of deluxe action figures, 3 3/4 or Black Series, obviously Hot Toys, Sideshow. So in trying to give an answer, I'm going to cheat a little bit and go outside the sequel trilogy, but stay in the modern era.
Mm.
And there may be a figure of him. I can't remember, but I want the deluxe action figure of Rala Keeley, Clint Howard's character. And I want him with they never had it so good action where he comes with some battle bots there, some droids fighting. And, you know, you can include L3 in this as well and have the L3 choking Rala Keeley scene. I actually love Clint Howard. His appearances in movies and Ron's films and all his stuff going back to when he was a child actor. I just think he's a fascinating just kind of character actor, and I love that he's in Star Wars and he fits so perfectly in Star Wars. And the fact that he's Rala Keeley and we got Madeline Keeley, love that connection, so I'll take that. And then to stick with the actual question, I was trying to think if maybe even you had suggested this in some form or other, Joseph, but I want the Sergeant Salty Sharp playset.
Oh, yeah, that's a great pick.
So you can include Gareth Edwards, sit next to him and just have some. I think it comes with a packet of like little sea salt. You can open the packet and put it down and have Salty Sharp say it's salt.
Yeah, with like finger taste in action, you squeeze his legs and his fingers goes to his mouth and his tongue comes out.
Yeah, that's what I want.
That is a great selection. Man, I'll keep this short because I could go real long on the action figures. As we know, if I was going to go outside of the sequel trilogy to just the Disney era, it would definitely be a 2-pack of my beloved Vat Weirdo and Orodia Ventafoli. Singing away there on the first light, you know.
Oh boy.
I would absolutely have to have those characters. Lulito Primock, his real name.
Yeah. That hurts if we don't have that.
Right. I know. And this is, you know, it's just I have faith. So many things in Star Wars have disappeared and come around again. I have faith that we will get to that point that we did get to the original trilogy of like, would you like this exact frame of Han's expression when he's halfway melted out of the carbon freezing? Out of the carbonite? Okay, you can. Look, his eyebrows are going up. You know, we'll get there. I believe it. But if I was going to do deluxe action figures from specifically the sequels, Claude would be funny if they made a big deal out of like, he's got all sorts of articulation. Look at how much his eye stalks move, you know, that kind of thing. With the squeeze and scream action, I would definitely like with Claude. This would be, I think you would like this one, a Hrothgar Deng that you like, kind of transformer that you can go from Dengar to do all the medical upgrades until he turns into Hrothgar Deng.
Oh, that's great. Like battle damage He-Man, you just kind of flip some stuff around and he's
got yeah. Yeah. And you stretch out his head and make his mouth go weird. Yeah. Oh, and then my final one, I think this is the big one that I'd go for ultimately. Because I always love the figure packs that are like this one specific moment, but also a little bit like, why'd you make an action figure of that? I would love the Thalassiren deluxe pack. You can somehow actually milk the Thalassiren, and it comes with a action figure of Luke that has the little bit of green milk in the beard.
Yes. Oh, frothy mug Luke.
Frothy mug Luke. That's great. Yeah. I think it's going to be a long wait for that one, so I'm going to have a lot of patience. A lot of patience.
Love that, too, there. And I'll throw it in Wicket and Pommet.
Oh.
And Skywalker. Be great, too.
Well, I'm glad that you ended on something that is actually likely. I can see that one happening for sure.
No, Frothy Mug Luke is going to happen.
Someday. Okay. We can dream. Deluxe Rey with also a quizzical upset expression on her face as well.
Yeah.
We're going to move on to Gary Thursby. Gary's question is a little deeper. My question is, when do you think is the exact moment Anakin returned in Return of the Jedi? I always thought it was when Vader was standing next to the Emperor watching Luke get electrocuted. My father, however, feels it's right after Luke defeats Vader. Vader puts his hand up for mercy. Luke shows mercy, lays his saber down, and confronts the Emperor. That compassion is what brings back Anakin. He was just biding his time next to the Emperor, waiting for the right moment to vanquish him. So this is a first for us, Ken. We get to decide a generational conflict between Gary and his father about a son and a father, kind of. What is your thoughts? Are your thoughts on when Anakin truly returns?
Well, first of all, I mean, wow. Yeah, this is a meta question here, right? And also, we record this episode on Mondays, Gary, too early on Monday for this deep and important of a Star Wars question. I got to say, it's a great question here. Joseph, I'm going to go with my gut reaction and say I'm kind of on Gary's side, that it's more when Luke is calling to him and saying, Father, Father, please, with the lightning bolts going around his teeth. However, I can break it down and get where a lot of that happens. I don't know, for my money, my Republic credits, Vader down, losing his hand, kind of, you know, asking for mercy is not Anakin. It is a broken, beaten shell of Vader. And that causes Luke to see, you know, again, literally, oh gosh, his hand, my hand, all that kind of stuff. But it sees Luke causes, I think that causes in a way Luke to see Anakin, or Vader, excuse me, confusing here, as he really is. And that kind of connects with him and causes him to throw down the blade. But I don't know if his father, Gary's father, is completely wrong here on this.
No,
I think I still go to the end. I think because I don't see it play. It's never played to me as Vader's back up waiting for the moment to kill the Emperor. I think he is back up out of habit, out of what the last 20 years plus has been for him. And he's still kind of kicking some thoughts around his brain for sure, but it's not until that father please moment. But I don't know. I could be knocked off that pedestal there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think I'm mostly in agreement with you. A huge shout out to Gary's father just for really pointing to that moment, which I haven't really considered a lot, of Vader putting his hand up and what exactly that means. I go with you that I think that is a moment of Vader is beaten. You know, I think a thing that he hasn't really experienced much. We've seen a lot in the comic books that, you know, he gets beat up a lot, but not totally like, no, I'm down. The way I see it is I think Vader is weakening throughout Return of the Jedi. There's a lot of moments that are softened, and he even says, you know, to Luke, it's, you know, too late for me, my son, but I'm committed. I have to, you know, I am of the dark side. I am attached to my master in some mysterious way, even if that's just by choice, whatever that is, that it feels like weakening, Mike. But I'm committed to this path. I don't see how I can turn back. And I've considered it, but this question really made me think about. I think that's part of the reason that Luke is able to beat him is that Vader is trying. He is trying to say, well, you know, you're foolish. You are going to fall before the dark side. It is inevitable. I'm going to keep fighting you. I'm going to threaten your sister. I'm going to, you know, use that exact same manipulation that was used on me. Mm. You know, if you don't turn, your loved one is going to pay for it. But maybe it is that Luke is beating him because Vader's connection to the dark side, to his anger, is weakening. He is not drawing as much power, and he is thoroughly defeated. And that hand is just saying, I'm down. And I tend to agree with you that dramatic moment, he is turning his head back and forth, trying to decide. You know, you can almost think about it like Vader hasn't had a reason to turn back. You know, he hates Obi-Wan. He blames the Jedi. Padme's gone. Why would he ever turn back? And he's so far down that road when he connects with Luke that this is the first moment where it's like, well, maybe there's a reason to turn back. And I think he's making that decision as he's looking between Emperor and Luke. And is he thinking through like, it wasn't my son, but I've been in this exact position before to choose between Sidious and a Jedi. And, you know, and that choice had consequences. And what's the choice going to be this time? And, you know, I know it's super, super controversial. A lot of people don't like it. That last pass that Lucas did on the changes to the original trilogy, he put in that no. And that feels like the moment of decision to me.
Yeah. And it plays even without that no, which is why it's controversial. Yeah. And I love the poetry with him, Anakin, choosing between Mace and Sidious years prior. I still think there's some base level stuff of Anakin or Vader, whoever's in there, and I've always contended that both are in there. It's just an ongoing war that he's looking at his son and going, and maybe for the first time thinking, I went through hell and I still go through hell. I'm still in pain physically, like literal pain. And to watch my son through that now, I'm connecting to that on some guttural base level, and I'm not going to let that happen to my son, among all the other things going on. I love what you said about the Vader slowly weakening through the movie. I think that scene with him and Luke on Endor is a pretty big scene that's maybe sometimes overlooked in bigger conversations about Star Wars or even Return of the Jedi or Luke and Vader's relationship. You said it, that moment where he's like, you know, it's too late for me, my son. It reads as, yeah, you're probably right, but I'm going to vote for him anyways. <You know? laughs> And that really resonates with me. And I think that deserves deeper, probably deeper analysis and combing over of that scene. And I think a lot of it, all this to say, Gary's father's not, I'm not saying this is a debate where one's right or wrong. I think what Gary's father is picking up on is it is a gradual slide. It's a gradual defeat of Vader by Anakin that is then pushed over by Luke in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I think maybe you could look at the hand coming up as he stops being actively Vader in that moment. He stops trying to push back and fight. And then Anakin arises. Yeah, yeah, there's great rhythm there, too, for just the way I think about the dark side, I think, because of the great moment with Kylo Ren in Rise of Skywalker, where you really see, like, there's no point, even if I have doubt and feel a pull to the light, there's no point in turning back because, you know, Leia, I can't go back to Leia after what I've done, you know? And that almost reads as like, well, son, I got nothing to come back for.
Yeah.
So too bad. I mean, it would have been great if I could turn back to the light side, but that's just not the way it goes. Sorry, kid.
Sorry, kid. Next time.
Sorry, kid. Next time. Yeah. Great stuff, Gary and Gary's father. Thank you. This is what I love about getting some of these questions that really make us think through beats in Star Wars that we know well, but get to look at them in a new light. We're going to move on to our questions from Patreon. Our first question is from patron Will Culbertson, and I'm going to be real honest here. We've had a thread going on our Patreon page for a while of questions, and I wanted to get to everybody's questions. There's a slim chance we've talked about this question before. It's just about time for new questions from our patrons. But this is what Will has to say. Thinking about the future of Star Wars animation. So far, every animated series has had its own distinct visual style. What would you say the pros and cons would be of Lucasfilm agreeing upon a single visual style for all animated projects going forward? While it may make things a bit less interesting visually, it could be a more cost-effective way to produce more animated content while expanding the Star Wars brand across multiple shows on Disney+. Ken, where do you fall on this? Pro or con if all of the animation was in the same style for a little while?
I think I'll fall down on the con side, though I understand where Will's coming from. I kind of like the subtle differences of each show, and you know, Clone Wars grew just as the tech grew and got better. This season 7 of Clone Wars, as we've talked about, obviously just beautiful. It's just beautiful, and I kind of hope Bad Batch is in the same vein. I'd rather have it just feel like the Clone Wars series, but I don't need it to. Rebels, I remember when Rebels came out, some of the designs, and it's more the character designs and the art and all that kind of stuff. I was not on board for early on. I didn't even like the bright colors. I was like, why hair is an orange and we get sherbet because it's sherbet in the Star Wars galaxy. Again, I'm in the middle of this Rebels rewatch. This is a series that I loved. When the series ended, I was like, nope, that's some of the best Star Wars out there. So it's not like some new revelation. But it's just amazing to me how I'm reacting to a lot of things that I just didn't react to, particularly in season 1 and 2, and how the show looks and feels, I really enjoy. Resistance, a little more sleeker, some beautiful space fighting, and I loved it. But I think, and I actually almost said Galaxy of Adventures with Titmouse animation. Look wonderful in a series in that regard. So I don't know. If I was to choose one, I'd go with the Rebels style. But Will, you know, I know a lot of folks in the animation industry. My old roommates were the animation industry, worked for SpongeBob, and they all went to CalArts. One of my friends designed a lot of the stuff for Invader Zim. That's a lot of his work. You don't want to pin those folks down. You want them to go wherever they want to go and find their own styles and how they design things. And I don't know. I'm not an expert in it, though, but that's where I'll go. I'll go con.
You go con. Con. Some deep and good thoughts on con there. Yeah. I think if it was a matter of we have to keep them cheaper or they can't exist, then I'd be like, oh, this is an interesting experiment. Sure. Then what is our sort of idealized, it's Star Wars and everything's going to be in this style for a little while. Cause you know, I've written for animation with a Tigtone on Adult Swim, weird fantasy comedy show, which is, it's a, my friend Andrew, who's one of the co-creators, made up in animation style, and then Titmouse had to reverse engineer it because it was so weird to figure out how to do it. But even then, in the writer's room, there's like, can we afford that discussions of creative stuff? You know, that's a big part of animation. So I get where that is, where that's coming from. And I still struggle with the lightsabers being thin in Rebels. I totally get it. It's all based off Ralph McQuarrie, and that's just like a little aesthetic thing that like I have to let go because it's like, ooh, I just want to reach in and pinch them, make them bigger. But all that said, I think what I get out of the different styles and why I like the different styles is there's something about it that reinforces this theme of Star Wars that I like of both different points of view in this idea that these are stories, these are myths. And I like all the canon connecting. I like it all being true. And I like that we are seeing for the most part the accurate record of events that happened a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. But seeing Rebels in one style makes me feel like, well, this is a specific era in time and a specific group of people. And maybe that's coming from one storyteller or one specific tome, but the story of the Bad Batch, it comes from Clone Wars, but it's the era after Clone Wars where these very unique clones are dealing with the fallout of Order 66. So maybe that's a whole different storyteller and that's a whole different book. And what does that visual look like? And there's something about the styles that just reinforces that sense of myth and different stories, all these different stories coming together to tell one big story.
Yeah, I'll give it a good old Force Center. Well said there. and Will, this is a great question, and I get it. I get where it comes from. So it made me think, and I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, no, and I love these questions that ask us to really consider the practical too. Because if Disney Plus really is, you know, counting their nickels and going, we could do two animated shows or one. But if we did two, it would have to be the similar style. You know, it's not like Disney is ever going to put that out as a, you know, a Twitter poll to vote on. But if it just meant more, I'd be okay with it. But I do like the multiple styles. Great question, Will. And apologies if we've answered it twice. But great to think about is Bad Batch is coming out and so closely associated with Clone Wars. It's a spinoff, so it would be really great to see what that art is going to be. We're going to move on to our final question from a patron on Patreon, longtime listener, Mark Canope. Always doing the best with the name. I think still somehow never quite nailing it myself. And Mark is a great supporter. So thank you, Mark, for all of the name shenanigans over the years. But here's Mark's great question. Do you think we'll get more stories with the sequel trilogy characters, especially set after episode 9? Or do you think they'll avoid it for a while? I'm really excited for the High Republic, but I hope we'll also get other stories. I'm excited for that Poe book, but I want more. I want more. Mark only wrote I Want More once, and I got excited. What are you thinking here, Ken? We've talked about this before, but what are you feeling now? You're getting this Poe book. We're realizing, you know, not only in the animated world, but the swirling possibilities of live action Disney Plus, the expansion of different books and audios and comic books. What are you wanting for the sequel trilogy characters?
I'm wanting right now a little bit of the backstory to be filled in. And again, I'm not some, and this was actually a discussion, a really good discussion going on our Discord server last week. I'm not a, I don't need every shadow and corner filled in Star Wars, but there's some big things I just like to know, and I want to spend time with these characters. I, like Mark, am really, I'm going to underline, really excited for the Poe book. I want more of that story. I want more of his relationship with Zori and the Spice Runners and all. I'm really excited for it. And I think you could give me some of those stories in book form or audio drama form, and I'd be really happy. Going forward, which is where Mark is really starting his question set after, I do think, and we've talked about it before, but I think they'll have to kind of avoid it for a little bit. I think it just, that's a big undertaking of moving the galaxy forward, moving the stories forward. They did it once, you know, George wrapped it all up himself. Even if he had thoughts of what was to come, he did wrap it up with a big old celebration on Endor. So you got to do that again carefully. Not that I haven't even thought about it. The reality, especially when it comes to making content, I think we all, we even talked about it here, you know, Boyega, Daisy Ridley, Oscar Isaac, they've done it. They are happy with it and it's made them successful in a lot of ways and they're ready to get back to different sides of acting and their career. So that's kind of my overall thought. And we're talking about it. We mentioned this recently, Joseph, and I think it's going to be a topic, you know, Republic Reborn, kind of looking ahead of just having some fun, almost fan fiction in our own way of what could come after that. So Mark, love to hear your thoughts on that too. But that's my complicated answer for a simple question.
No, it's a complicated answer for a complicated question. I will echo that I'm excited for the Poe book. I think the Poe book is exciting because this revelation that he had this sort of a questionable period in his past opens up storytelling. You know, if we could get some really great writers to get into Rey on Jakku, Finn training in the First Order and find a way to make those stories, you know, really meaty and meaningful while still, you know, not developing the characters to the point that we see them in the movie to take away from that storytelling. I think that would be interesting, but their storytelling is a little limited by their past. So I think that leaves us really excited for stuff set after episode 9, as well as episode 9 just being a great, like, oh, I want to see Rey use that lightsaber. I want to see Finn explore his connection to the Force. I want to see, you know, Poe has accepted he's a leader, but what does he do with that leadership? Does he actually enjoy it, even though he's good at it? So many great questions, Lando and Janna and on and on and on. But so, yes, it's some of the most excited I've been for Star Wars stories in a long time, wanting those stories. But to me, the question is, it's not going to happen in visual media soon, I think, because of the actors, as you said. And the book choice is, are you comfortable with an EU situation? Are you comfortable with, you know what, screw it. We're just in publishing, we're going to start a whole series of the new Republic, you know, or whatever it is, the latest Jedi Order. And we're going to follow And you just have to accept in 5, 10, 15 years, we might wipe it. And that's a really interesting and challenging question of what we would want as fans. Like, if that was this is one of the things that could happen, are you okay if it gets wiped out, question, is it worth hearing those stories? And then my last thing, which connects to that, is just having been through this a couple times, you know, Star Wars has ended a couple times in our lifetime. Mm. I think just patience, right? Because I truly believe maybe 5 years, maybe 7, maybe 10, maybe 15, particularly when people who grew up with the sequel trilogy and they have no baggage with it, they just have love. It's their Star Wars. And those people are starting to have kids and more income. And all these actors have explored other things. And then it's interesting to them to come back to, well, what is Rey like 20 years after she's been a Jedi for 20 years and she's trained other people? Then those stories become interesting to the actors. I think they become fascinating to the writers, and they become, I think, a different business proposition because you're dealing with the generation that loved those stories. I really do think that we're going to see something again someday with these characters, even if it's just Finn, it's just Poe, it's just Rey. I think we're going to see something again, but in order to get to those adventures, we must have time and patience.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I know Mark became a Star Wars fan around the time of Force Awakens. So, Mark, take it from us old broken Star Wars souls. You just have to wait. Eventually, it all comes back.
Never in a million years did I think I would get to see Mark Hamill pull that hood down again, you know?
Not even a sliver of a chance, right, Joseph? Not even, never thought that this would happen.
No, it wouldn't. That part of Star Wars was, all of Star Wars was gone, but that part, no, the prequels, no. Yes, sure, cool, he did a voice, yeah, great for something, you know, in Clone Wars, great, but yeah, patience rewarded us, right?
It did.
Those are our questions for the day from Mark, from Will, from Gary, and Gary's father, and Glenn. Thank you all, great questions, as always.
Man, really good stuff today. Thanks for bringing it, fans. You always do, and we enjoy connecting with you. If you want to reach out, you can follow us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. Use the hashtag Force Center and the hashtag release the leap and lift footage. Like our Facebook page, like us on Instagram, find us on YouTube. We got a new show and tell on the way. In Memoriam Season 2 wrapping up. A lot of fun things going on over there. You can find the podcast on our home, Anchor, but also on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. Just search. If it's not there, let us know. We'll try to add it. We have merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter, and you can support us at patreon.com/ForceCenter. We're always excited to have new patrons. We're making plans and always new stuff coming soon. In fact, there might be a little special show we're dropping this week. We'll try a little experiment. I don't want to say too much in case I decide that I hate everything about myself in the show, but look for that too. In addition to the Clone Wars report, we got our own stuff going on as well. You can go to kenapsack.com for information on all the things I do, including my baseball podcast, Box Score Heroes. Major League Baseball returns one way or another. It returns this week with official games. So we'll be talking about that there. And Joseph, where can they follow you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw. As I'm recording this, I had what I meant to be a fun tweet about the movie Tenet, and many people taking me very, very seriously. So if you want to see me have a joke being not taken in the spirit it was intended, come join me on Twitter at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can find all my other comedy adventures on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. We've been doing plugs for real world stuff. We want to do what we can to get the message out about making the world a better place. And this was something that I came across on social media, a charity that Grant Imahara, our friend who is sadly moved on to the next adventures in life, has contributed to in the past. And it is a site for getting help to kids in need, and it is called donorschoose.org. So give that a look and see if that is something that you would like to contribute to, donorschoose.org.
Absolutely. Support a classroom, build a future is their mandate. Check it out. Well, well said, Joseph, on that there. We are out of here. Star Wars news and cues is wrapped up. But later this week, we will be looking at Shadowfall, the second novel in the Alphabet Squadron series. And as we said at the top of the show, the Clone Wars Report returns. Get ready to rewatch the Clone Wars in chronological order with the Force Center team. Look for that soon. That is it for now. For Alden Ehrenreich, we'll all see you soon, right? This was Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.